On today's episode of Let's Locums.
The most important piece of advice I can give to a doc who's looking to do locums for the first time is to be very protective of their CV. That's something that you don't want to just send to anybody you talk to any recruiter. And when you do, you want to make it explicitly clear that you do not want your name presented at a hospital without your express permission. Otherwise, this has the potential to lock you out from working with any other company and be extremely limited in your negotiations for a daily rate. Welcome to Let's Locums, the podcast hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer, ENT surgeons and the founders of SpecialtyLocums.com. Join us as we explore the world of locum tenens and help you navigate the options for a flexible and rewarding medical career. Hi, welcome to Let's Locums. This is Mark Royer, and I'm here with my wife, Allison Royer. We're ear, nose, and throat surgeons who work with SpecialtyLocums.com. We've had a couple of episodes already to talk about our background, give some context for how and why we started SpecialtyLocums.com and how it can help physicians achieve the work-life balance they may be looking for. But today, Allie, I'd really like to talk about how to get started in locums for someone who has no experience at all, maybe is some familiarity, maybe no familiarity, but they'd really like to explore jobs, opportunities, but they have no idea how to get started. What would you recommend?
So that's a great question. And I think that there's kind of how we do it and maybe how other companies do it. I know other companies, you know, you get these texts like, hey, Dr. Royer, do you or anyone else you know want to work this job in Peoria, Illinois? And, you know, contact me if you do. And you get those texts and you get those emails. And those are recruiters. Those are recruiters from locums companies reaching out with assignments, existing relationships with hospitals, and they're trying to fill those roles. And so one way to do it would be to interact then with that recruiter whose job it is to match someone into that site. The way we do it is very different than that. We have a website, and because of our specialty specific start in the ear, nose, and throat surgical field, we have entlocums.com. And so we get a lot of submissions through our website of people reaching out, ENTs who want to do ENT locums. We also have a large word of mouth network. You know, I'm interested in locums. I want to work locums, or maybe I'm interested in locums in 2 years, or maybe I just want to know more about it. So these are phone calls that Mark and I take all the time.
Yeah, that's right. And we don't really keep a job board. There are services that you can pay for to blast your job openings. The way they get those numbers is they're like Doximity will sell them to anybody who is willing to pay like $5,000 or $10,000. And so that's how they get your number. It's stuff that you at some point have signed up for a newsletter or an email,
potentially,
or
even
terms of service or
your academy or your board.
That's right. Yeah. Our academy sells that information. I'm sure it's a source of pretty significant source of revenue for them to be able to do that.
Well, I think it's interesting because when we talk about a topic for a podcast and it's, you know, if you're a physician who wants to work locums, you know, how do you go about doing that? I think it's just remiss not to mention that that's the most traditional way, but it's also the way that we have departed from traditional locums in our own business and gone in a different direction.
Right, right.
And so for us, if you want to work locums, shoot us a message through our website, give us a text, can talk about it. You know, we all the time are talking to ENTs throughout the country who are at different positions in their careers, have different needs. But you know, that the commonality of locums is in their heads for some reason or another. Sometimes they're very serious about it. Like, what do you have right this minute? I'm very ready. Let's go. Sometimes it's way more vague, a vague interest, or maybe they just had a bad day at their existing job.
That's pretty common.
Which happens.
You had a bad day.
Relate.
Pop open a bottle of wine. You get on and you start Googling.
That's
and
right.
I get a lot
That's
of
right.
People
we
reaching
get some
out
of
through
that. But we love talking to those people.
Yeah. You have recruiters reaching out. So,
yes.
I mean, you can respond to those. You
Correct.
Can obviously, if you're a specialty surgeon, either through entlocums.com where we started, and now speciallylocums.com where we do all kind of things related to surgery, anesthesia, and then various subspecialties, reach out to us. But I think a way a lot of people do it, and just so listeners understand the
wide variety of options and ways to go about it. I mean, what I would do is I would go to like LinkedIn, right? Sometimes jobs are posted on there. Usually though, it's a little bit kind of the Wild West because you don't know if it's a middleman of a middleman of a middleman who's posted that job to then, you know, send it to maybe then sell that lead to someone else. The big players in the field, is probably important to mention that if do have actually their own jobs posted. Comp Health is probably the largest locums company. They're a $1 billion locums company. They're owned by a publicly traded company called CHG. CHG also owns Weatherby, which is also a big player in the locum space, and Global Medical Staffing. Global Medical Staffing is, if people are interested in international locums, that tends to be the one that, like in New Zealand, for example, they're the only American company that has that ability to kind of work with the New Zealand government. The New Zealand government prefer you contact them directly. So, you know, going to the source is always a great idea. So Comp Health, Weatherby, locumtenants.com is not related to those companies, but they're also very large. And then I would say, if you go to the NALTO website, NALTO stands for National Association of Locum Tenants Organizations. It is just what it sounds like. It's the locum tenants companies have to agree to a certain code of ethics. They have to agree to insurance requirements and ways they interact with docs and clients. Our company's been a member of that for about 2.5 years now. That organization has tripled in size since we joined. Last I checked, they have over 150 members. They started with about 10, about 10 or 15 years ago. When we joined, there were probably about 50 or 60, maybe 70. It has really grown the number of members that they have. But NALTO has a way that, you know, you can go on there and put your name on there and you'll be contacted immediately by probably 75 different companies. Frequently, yeah, when those come through, it's not uncommon to then get an email from NALTO afterwards saying, please, everybody take this person off the list, because I think those are hot leads of people that are interested.
Yes. So, and yeah. Mark serves on the ethics committee for NALTO. And that's so right. He, along with his fellow committee members, review issues that arise either from physicians who are working locums and have an issue with a locums company, or locums companies that have issues with other locums companies and the ethics of those. So there is actual recourse for people who have issues. If you kind of start down that path, find a NALTO affiliated person to work with, and then there an issue arises.
That's exactly right. So that if obviously we'd prefer any doc who is in our area of expertise work with us, but if not, then going through a NALTO company would be what I think we both would highly recommend.
Absolutely.
For if no other reason, then there is a place that you can go if you feel like you've been treated unethically. And so by that we mean, I mean, examples, and we could do a whole episode on this, but examples of kind of what locums companies are not supposed to do is ruse a candidate. So say prices that aren't actually what you're going to get paid. You say, oh, you can make $1 million a day at this job if, you know, you let me present your name. Presenting candidates, like that's the other thing. When you send your, be very careful sending your CV in and saying you can present, because then that locks you out of working with any other company. So those are some of the things that, you know, that are pitfalls. Recruiters presenting you to a hospital site if you haven't approved it. And if you're an NALTO member, if you're working with an NALTO member, then there are pathways to correct that and to censor that and to make that right. But there are a lot of companies that are out there that are not members. And so that would be an area to look in, is if you're going to go to a company directly, check, see if they're NALTO members, and then go from there.
Yes.
Okay. So you've looked online, you've reached out to us, or I think from there we're pretty similar. I think the kind of next steps and time frame. So
yes.
Let's say you found a job that you like, you're interested in, you've reached out to the recruiter or to our company, and you hear back, right? They call you back like, oh great, thanks for reaching out. Here, let's schedule a time to talk about this position.
Yes.
What happens then?
Yes. So at that point, you can expect to get a lot of information about the work that you would potentially be doing. The site, the hospital, the size, specifics about what the tasks involve. Will it be inpatient? Will it be outpatient? Will it be surgical? Will it be call coverage? Will you be staffing shifts? If you're a hospitalist or an ER physician, how often, or other shift work, based specialties, how often will you be working? How many days on, how many off? How many days a month do they require coverage for? What types of patients? What level of trauma center? All of those different details so you can get a really clear vision of the work that you'll be expected to do at the site. How many other physicians are in the group?
Can you ask about pay at that time?
Oh, I think yes. I think that's absolutely the time to get pay and information about pay. In addition to the specifics of the job and the work, which often the pay in, depending on the specialty, but often the pay is reflective of the type of work. So that kind of all goes together. What will be expected of you in the job at the hospital? And then also what is the expected compensation for the work?
And then at that point, so it sounds good to you and you're like, okay, well, this sounds like a potential opportunity that would work for me. I like the pay. I think I can manage what the expectations are. The next step at that point typically is they'll ask for your CV and they'll ask to present you to the site. Is that right?
Yes.
Talk to the recruiter. You've talked to the site. You like the sound of the job. They ask you to present your CV and you agree to that with knowing that at that point, that would be the, if you're going to work at that specific site, that'll be the company that you're with. So
yes.
You say, send them your CV, they present you to the hospital and then what happens?
Well, I think it is somewhat specialty specific, but sometimes the physicians in the group, sometimes the CMO or another managing healthcare provider would want to speak to you directly.
Does that need to be in person? Can that be over the phone?
It can often be over the phone.
So they speak with you. They like you. You like them. When can you start?
Yes.
What happens then?
Yes. So then you start the process of becoming potentially licensed if you don't already have a license in that state, credentialed with the hospital, potentially credentialed with payers, depending on if you're going to be billing for you or billing at a locums situation. And so additional credentialing and licensing steps. And then scheduling, working out what dates you're available, how often you'll be available, and then matching that up with the needs of the site.
And typically what I find is there's not a very good understanding as far as those steps you just described, that kind of time frame with that. So
correct.
You just said you've got licensing for the state, you've got credentialing. There's two types of credentialing. There's really three. There's credentialing for the locums company, which most all Nalto companies will require that they do their own due diligence on you, background check, checking education, checking residencies, et cetera.
Personal references.
Yes. And then there's the hospital credentialing to be able to get privileges. But then the big one that kind of sneaks up on people is the payer credentialing. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So in order for the hospital site to bill for your services, certain payers require separate credentialing with their healthcare plans. And so that if you've started a job at a hospital in the past, you might be familiar with that, but that can take potentially months depending on the state and the site.
In terms of duration of those three things, hospital credentialing, payer credentialing, and licensing, what I've seen is the quickest can be the hospital credentialing. And then the second would be licensing, state licensing. Then the third would be payer credentialing typically.
I think that's correct.
What type of timeframes would we be looking at?
That's one of the most common questions I get asked when physicians reach out to us wanting to get information about locums. And I'll tell you what I tell them, which is it is highly variable depending on the state and the hospital. There are states that can get that executed within 6 to 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And there are states where it takes 6 to 8 months. And it really is variable. You want to be working with a company in that state that can give you very specific information.
Right. Right. And the states we operate in, we've done enough licensing that we have a good understanding of those states.
Oh, we can within a week or two. Yeah, we can give you an estimate.
But I think as a rule of thumb, the chance that someone would reach out to us on the 1st of December and want to work later that month, I mean, that would almost be a 0% chance, right?
Yes, that happens. And yes, that's very difficult to do unless you are already working in that state and then got emergency privileges.
Right.
So they're already,
already
I can think of
license.
An exception.
Yeah.
So if you have a license in the state and the site was desperate enough to give you emergency privileges, you could execute it. But what do you typically tell people?
I usually tell them 6 months, three to six months. And that would be like a site that was pretty motivated to get, like, they're like, oh, we're really overwhelmed. We need some call coverage, 3 to 6 months. That would be if they weren't licensed, depending on the state.
That's right.
During COVID, some of those states were taking forever to get licensed in. I mean, we had one that was taking like almost 9 months, which That's was great. Correct. And we tried everything. We did letters of need. And finally, it all comes down to finding that one person. You know, find the number of that one person, and then you're good to go. You can actually like figure out what's going on. And so, you know, that was the first time we had licensed in that state. But we haven't run into that for quite some time. No. I think the longest is about 3 months. But yeah, I usually tell when docs reach out, yeah, about 3 to 6 months. If it's an emergency, right? If someone, there's a busy doc who's had like a medical issue and they're on leave, then there are exceptions where they can actually go ahead and emergency credential, which really is, they have some rules on that, but it essentially just, it requires signatures of some docs and on the medical staff. You're already licensed. And then for payer credentialing, there is something that sites can do under certain guidelines where they can actually bring in a new doctor, bill what's called a locums modifier. And if the doc is still working, that doesn't work, that they're covering for doesn't work. But if he's on medical leave or had some maternity leave or some other medical issue or needed to be gone for whatever reason, and you're truly filling that slot, then theoretically you could do that, you know, within a few weeks. All right. So you have your first shift scheduled. Anything else that?
No, now the fun begins. You get to start working as a locums physician.
Show up. What do they do for orientation?
Yeah. So I should say, you know, the show up part. So often there's a travel component. So you'll be working with your locums company to make travel plans that can involve driving and getting reimbursed. It can involve on either your own car or a rental car. That can involve flights and your preferences for those. And then hotels are another big part of it. You know, often people have preferences on that front and those can be accommodated. You should expect those to be accommodated. People have different needs. People have dietary needs and want to have Airbnbs or suite hotel rooms.
Sometimes they'll bring their kids along.
Sometimes they'll bring their children or other family members, spouses. All of those needs, you can expect those to be met with travel planning, you know, to the ability of the region you're going to. Hotels, flights, and travel will be arranged, and then there will be orientation. The expectation is that you will be oriented as any new physician at a site would be oriented, even though you aren't a permanent employee. It's usually a day or two, depending on the system, of on-site orientation, and then sometimes paid orientation modules leading up to that right. that can be done remotely.
So if you're doing it from home and they like require that you watch the hand washing one, yeah, we consider that part of orientation. So we exactly. request that be covered. Yeah, excellent. And so, I mean, and this is something that you've really tried to stress and make clear and really make it a requirement whenever we're negotiating with potential clients is we don't want our docs to be paying anything out of pocket.
No.
So whether that's licensing, DEA, credentialing, and we also value their time. We don't want a whole bunch of, as things have moved to online, we don't want this expectation that, oh, your orientation that used to be in person over 2 days can now be in person a half a day. On the back end, then you have a day and a half of online stuff. I mean, we include all of that as, hey, that's all orientation. That's all, it's your time that you're spending on that should be reimbursed.
That's correct.
So we try to really minimize, we don't want any out of pockets for our docs to do this.
No.
Yeah. So you go and work the shift, and what happens next?
Some of that depends on your payment model and what you're expected to turn in terms of timesheets. You know, if you're covering call and you have callback hours and things like that, you may have to give more detailed reporting of the hours you spent. If you're covering things like clinics or shifts that are, you know, 8 hours or certain days, that reporting may be less necessary, but essentially you confirm you've worked the shift and then you turn in whatever timesheets are needed based on the work that you've done and any reimbursement that you need if you were paying out of pocket for any of those travel expenses. And then you expect to get paid.
In our company, we try to shoot for about 5 business days to get paid and
That's
reimbursed.
Right.
It's really only limited by when the timesheet gets submitted. Tell me then, okay, you get the check, you get the reimbursement, you get paid for your time. How's that going to look? Are we withholding taxes? Tell me about that.
That's a great question. In our business, our physicians are working as independent contractors. And so we are not withholding taxes.
So they'll get the full amount that they bill. And then in January is when comes the 1099 tax form.
Correct.
There are certainly advantages of having 1099 income. there are disadvantages, mostly in the fact you're paying your own employment taxes. But some of the advantages are things, I mean, a lot, you can write off any expenses that you incur in related to your locum's work that aren't reimbursed. So like a home office, for example, most of the time, right? Are you not going to answer?
I'm not going to answer that. I mean, I think... Check out
The White Coat Investor $10.99.
Yeah, I don't think of it in terms of advantages and disadvantages. I think of it more in terms of just planning. So the amount that you get is the number that, you know, you were told you'd be paid fully, unlike a standard paycheck where it's being manipulated in different ways by your workplace. And so you really just have to plan accordingly and factor that in.
Right. Excellent. That's it. So you get your 1099, you file your taxes, you're good to go. Rinse and repeat.
Well, you may want to speak to an accountant. Like
you have been listening to Let's Locums, a podcast brought to you by SpecialtyLocums.com and hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer. SpecialtyLocums.com is a physician-run locum tenens company. We're dedicated to providing the best locum tenens opportunities for our amazing healthcare providers. Join us every week as we dive deep into the world of locum tenens. Time stays still.